Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 625, titled You Gotta Be Kidding, Part 2, Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This has been recorded on February 17th of the year 2008. Well, tomorrow is President's Day, and boy, I'll tell you, these days, that should give us a pause to think, because it's been a President's Day is the day in which we commemorate the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. Both of them, by the way, Republicans, for what it's worth, which is actually in terms of money quite a bit these days, but in terms of political integrity, not so much in the contemporary parlance. I guess one could say that the Republican Party has undergone a rather dramatic transition. The party of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Norman Rockwell has become the party of George Lincoln Rockwell. By the way, he was the Führer of the American Nazi Party, and his Arlington, Virginia name, address, and telephone number were in the address book of the supposed lone nut communist Lee Harvey Oswald at the time of his arrest. One of the things that I've spoken about in conjunction with, again, the fifth column movement that is present in this country, a fifth column which has as one of its faces the what I call the Underground Reich, and another close, inextricably linked face, that of Islamic fascism as well. We've spoken in the past about the profound Islamic fascist links to the Republican Party in the milieu of George Bush. We've spoken about Grover Norquist, Talat Otman, a name we're going to come back to later, and Karl Rove. These were some of the names that cropped up in connection with lobbying for some of the most insidious terrorist elements in this country, and in particular, links between the targets of the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids and the Republican Party produced some very, very embarrassing situations indeed. And on April 4th of 2002, Talat Otman, a close personal friend of and political advisor to both Georges Bush, a director of Harkin Energy, George W. Bush's oil company, or one of them, a protege of the BCCI milieu, and an individual who gave a Muslim benediction at the 2000 Republican convention. Talat Otman was a managing director of the Islamic Institute, and that lobbying group represented the point of intersection between the linchpins of the Republican Party, like Karl Rove, former White House chief of staff, or basically the Houdini, not the Houdini, but the Svengali behind the White House, and Grover Norquist, the Republican lobbyist extraordinaire, who, along with Karl Rove and Talat Otman, put together the Islamic Institute, a way of focusing Muslim influence and petroleum-related economic clout into the Republican Party. The GOP/Islamic terror funding connection has gone virtually untouched. Certainly not many people are talking about it, and very little has been done about it. After Talat Otman, who should be really called Talat Bush, if we're going to call Prince Bandar Bandar Bush, we should call Talat Otman Talat Bush. But after he interceded with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on behalf of the targets of the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, the largest terror funding bust in history, then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill was fired. The political landscape is surreal because one of the very few groups that does talk about the Republican link to the terror funding apparatus through elements like Grover Norquist, Talat Otman, and others are conservative elements like Front Page Magazine and some related elements. And yet, they're supportive of George Bush, which is surreal. And another equally surreal and related dynamic is the fact that elements of the so-called progressive sector, which are at least ostensibly critical of George Bush, are very supportive of people like Samuel Arian. And it was the investigation into Samuel Arian himself, a close political ally of the Bush family, that led directly to the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. Again, the largest terror funding bust in history in this country. And that revealed the link links between the Muslim Brotherhood, the Bank al-Taqwa, headed up by former Nazi intelligence agent Youssef Nada, and the GOP, and elements like Karl Rove, Grover Norquist, and Talat Altman. It was the investigation into Sami al-Arian that led to those raids, and yet Sami al-Arian, a good friend of the Bushes, is also the darling of much of the progressive sector, notably the Pacifica Radio Network in particular. So that schizophrenia, which or blind eye, on the one hand, the left's blind eye to its right eye and the right's blind eye to its links to the very elements that they criticize. Well, it's surreal. It is just surreal. Exemplifying that surreality is an article by Front Page Magazine. It's a very conservative publication, which has done some pretty good reportage on terror funding and on some of the links between the terror funding milieu and the GOP, and yet they're supportive of Bush and the same elements that are connected to that. So go figure. But while you're figuring, check out this article, a pretty good one, actually, from Front Page Magazine, with all of the caveats that I've already indicated. This is an article by Robert Spencer titled A Congressman for Jihad. It's datelined January 17th of 2008. It reads in part, former U.S. Congressman Mark Dely Siljander, Republican of Michigan, was indicted Wednesday for money laundering, conspiracy, and obstruction of justice in connection with charges that a Muslim charity, the Islamic American Relief Agency, or IARA, was involved in efforts to finance the Afghan jihad terrorist Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. The IARA was named a specially designated global terrorist organization by the U.S. Treasury Department in 2004. John F. Wood, U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Missouri, declared, quote, an organization right here in the American heartland allegedly sent funds to Pakistan for the benefit of a specially designated global terrorist with ties to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The indictment also alleges that a former congressman engaged in money laundering and obstruction of a federal investigation in an effort to disguise IARA's misuse of taxpayer money and that the government had provided for humanitarian purposes, unquote. According to the indictment, the IARA sent around $130,000 to bank accounts controlled by its parent organization, the Islamic Relief Agency, or ISRA, in Peshawar, Pakistan, where the money went to Hekmatyar's activities. The ISRA's headquarters are in Khartoum, Sudan, with the Columbia, Missouri-based IARA as its American office until it was shut down. According to the Treasury Department, quote, IARA is formally affiliated with Maktab al-Khidmat, or the MK, or MAK as some call it, which was co-founded and financed by Osama bin Laden and is the precursor organization of Al-Qaeda. The IARA has also funneled money to Hamas. And then the article goes on to talk about the circumstances which led this particular GOP congressman to be indicted for financing terrorism. By the way, Mr. Hekmatyar Gulbuddin, or Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, excuse me, is also deeply involved in the heroin trade, according to many accounts. That, again, just one example of the GOP slash Islamo-fascist connection that has gone basically unreported. There is, of course, a very significant degree of complicity between elements in this country and the September 11th attacks, including elements associated with the Bush administration, the September 11th attacks. But it isn't the stuff that we're hearing from the so-called 911 truth movement. In fact, they're not talking about that at all. And it's right out in plain sight, so go figure. We'll touch on that, by the way, in a bit. More about the fifth column. One of the really terrifying things, as we looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 467, is the fact that many of these Grover Norquist slash Bush slash GOP related Islamist elements have gone unmolested. And one of the tributaries that comes out of the investigation into terror financing is a computer software company called P-TECH, which basically has been financed to a large extent by people linked to the financing of international terrorism, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda. and many of the same elements that were focal points of the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids also crop up in connection with PTEC, and PTEC developed the threat assessment software architecture for the United States Air Force, the FAA, NORAD, the Department of Energy, among others. And, of course, the FAA, NORAD, and the United States Air Force front and center in the activities that went down on September 11th. And the Department of Energy, by the way, oversees the maintenance of nuclear power plants in the United States. Again, Grover Norquist, arguably the most important GOP lobbyist. He married a Palestinian Muslim woman, and in response to a conservative colleague's question as to whether he had converted to Islam, because Palestinian Muslims are among the most conservative of Islamic elements, and it's generally frowned on for a Palestinian Muslim woman to marry a non-Muslim. In response to a colleague's question as to whether he had converted to Islam in order to marry his Palestinian Muslim wife, Grover Norquist responded, quote, "That's too personal a question," unquote. And this, again, coming I don't think it requires a great deal of much of a leap of faith, pun intended, to see that as a between the lines. Yes, of course, that was an overt response by Grover Norquist to the overt query by a conservative colleague, perhaps a more candid response on Grover Norquist's part. The yes that I think that constitutes would have alienated the Christian right, an absolutely inextricable, a fundamental element in all senses of the world, a word of the Republican base. And again, that's Grover. We've got to privatize everything in the world, including both halves of your very own rear end, Norquist. In response to a colleague's question as to whether he had converted to Islam, that's too personal a question. And it appears that the placing of Islamists and Islamist sympathizing elements in critical positions is not something limited to the United States. One of the sad things is that articles like this come out and nothing gets done about it. Speaking of fifth columns, rather like what we talked about in For the Record 467, rather like what we talked about in 515, rather like what we talked about in connection with the project. And the following is from the Evening Standard of Britain, and the full URL for the web posting will be in the description for the program. This particular story is about the Islamist penetration of infrastructure in the United Kingdom. And again, this is from the Evening Standard of July 8th of 2007. The Evening Standard is a British paper. And compare this with the PTEC/related fifth column in the United States. Islamist extremists have infiltrated government and key public utilities to pass sensitive information to terrorists, the security services have warned. Counterterrorism officials say insiders or their associates are almost certainly working undetected in sensitive posts and are actively supporting the activities of extremists. In some cases, lifelong relationships between friends or relatives are being exploited to obtain crucial information from those in sensitive posts. The development is detailed in intelligence reports circulated to the Home Office, police, and Whitehall officials. The London Underground, Gatwick Airport, and BT are cited as examples of organizations which have been targeted by individuals linked to terrorists. Officials say the idea of penetrating the enemy is pervasive, unquote, for Islamist extremists. It is understood that a number of suspected jihadists working in government departments and the public services are being monitored by the security services. Details of the threat emerged months after the Daily Mail revealed fears that Scotland Yard has been infiltrated by individuals linked to extremist groups, including Al-Qaeda. Several police officers and civilian staff are being monitored, and claims they are long-term sleepers trying to gain sensitive information of use to terrorists. Several police officers and civilian staff are being monitored amid claims they are long-term sleepers trying to gain sensitive information of use to terrorists. Some are even believed to have attended terror training camps in Pakistan or Afghanistan. Fanatics who infiltrate the government or the critical national infrastructure, unquote, vital utilities such as water, electricity, transport, and communications have a number of objectives. These include trying to gain information on what the law enforcement agencies know about the activities of fellow Islamist extremists and how to evade the attention of police and the security services. They may also try to obtain information or intelligence to help them carry out acts of terrorism. This involves getting access to premises or individuals, quote, with the immediate purpose, unquote, of mounting an attack or obtaining sensitive information to facilitate a later atrocity, unquote. And skipping down, a terrorist jailed for his involvement in a bomb attack on the Paris Metro later came to England and got a job as a traffic warden. Mustafa Boutarfa, 32, was arrested by Scotland Yard's anti-terrorist squad in 1996 and extradited from Britain to France 2 years later. He stood trial for his auxiliary role in the 1995 attack on the Saint-Michel station by a notorious Islamist militant group, in which 8 were killed and 89 wounded, and he was given a 2-year prison sentence. But after his release, Boutarfa, who held dual French and Algerian nationality, managed to get back into the UK with his wife and children and secured the job as a parking attendant in Richmond-upon-Thames, Surrey, with NCP services. Boutarfa's secret would probably never have come to light had he not accused a van driver of assaulting him in a row over a parking ticket in October of 2005. It led to the sensational disclosure about his past in open court. So a British manifestation of the PTEC phenomenon in the United States, and more about some of the Fifth Column activities which have manifested themselves, and some of the related information about such activities. We're going to take a look now at an article about a possible Fifth Column, basically a Fifth Column activist in the United States, who, according to some, has been responsible for basically helping to deep six an investigation into WMDs, this one in Iraq. Now, in our last interview with John Loftus, he disclosed that he had basically in his possession some translated Iraqi military documents which revealed not only that there actually was technology, if not an active program, but certainly technology and the ability to continue with a WMD program, that it was buried in facilities under a river, and that it was basically smuggled out right under the noses of U.S. troops. I've heard allegations to that effect before in what concerns basically what is classified, I should say, as scuttlebutt, sort of military gossip. This is the first alleged confirmation of same, and I'm not casting aspersions on John Loftus. I suspect that the documents are genuine. This is the sort of thing that when Winston Churchill was ruminating about victory and defeat in war, he noted that victory has 1,000 fathers while defeat is an orphan. If, in fact, those documents that John Loftus has are genuine, and I suspect that's the case, it's not the sort of thing anybody's going to own up to, and rather kind of like the GOP Islamist link. You're not going to hear the progressive forces talking about it because they have the links to the same elements through Samuel Arian and his Amen chorus in the progressive sector. That same element is what links the Bush administration to the funding of the very terrorists who manifested themselves on September 11th and who were aided by a fifth column in this country, including and especially elements linked to the Bush administration. So, too, you're certainly not going to hear the so-called progressive sector talking about the John Loftus documents because it's now part of their orthodoxy that no such thing took place. It's not to say that I justify the invasion of Iraq. I do not. I think it was a mistake. As I've said before, I think we were lured into a situation which now appears this much more complex. But considering the documents that John Loftus has, and certainly the Bush administration and its defenders at this point are not going to come out and say, hey, actually, look, Saddam did have weapons of mass destruction, or at least the means to rapidly begin producing them, because it was smuggled out right under their noses. And their ostensible reason for the invasion, if it turned out to be valid, and to a certain extent it was, there was no link between Saddam Hussein and September 11th, but there does appear to have been an at least moribund and easily refreshed WMD program, and yet it got out right under Bush's nose, so he's certainly not going to talk about it. The elements who defend him certainly aren't going to talk about it. But this may have come to place in part because of the aforementioned Fifth Column. The following is from an article in the New York Sun. full URL will be available on the in the description for the program. And this adds yet another layer of conspiracy slash mystery over the whole WMD question. And we're going to explore the Iraqi WMD question, real and or alleged. We're going to explore the Iranian WMD connection later on as well. But bear in mind that there's a whole lot more going on here than what we have been told. The following article is called Mystery Deepens Over WMD Documents. It's by Joseph Goldstein, a staff reporter of the New York Sun. It reads in part, how the classified military documents from Iraq, which named the coordinates of where the Army suspected weapons of mass destruction to be hidden, ended up in Arabic translator's apartment on Hoyt Street in Brooklyn is clear. Not likely to be known anytime soon is what, if anything, the Army contractor did with the documents. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Brooklyn, which is prosecuting the case, appears to have little direct evidence that Nuruddin Maliki passed information to the insurgency, either during his time in Iraq in 2003 and 2004, or upon his return to America in 2005. But it has raised the possibility that he may have done so. The government has said Maliki regularly called phone numbers connected to insurgents and took bribes of at least $11,500 from Sunni tribal leaders. The government prosecutors wrote in one court filing could, quote, establish that the defendant had an opportunity to provide stolen classified information to anti-coalition forces, unquote. Yesterday, at a hearing in U.S. District Court in Brooklyn, an Army officer with the 82nd Airborne Division described some of the reports that Maliki had obtained. Quote, the information is so critical that you do not want the information to get into the hands of anyone without the need to know, unquote, Lieutenant Colonel Michele Bradenkamp said, referring to a mission analysis report for the 82nd Airborne Division to which Maliki was attached. The document, among other things, described convoy routes and named known terrorists the Army was targeting. So was there some fifth column type activity linked to the deep sixing or the spiriting away of the WMDs that John Loftus alluded to? We're going to explore that whole question at greater length in weeks to come. By the way, it has been alleged by those in the know that, in fact, the recent disclosure concerning the Iranian WMDs, and again, whereas the Bush administration had been saying that Iran was developing nuclear weapons or pushing to develop nuclear weapons, now the National Intelligence Estimate has come out with a report that says, no, actually, that is not the case. And there are indications that, in fact, that might be the case. There is an article that is basically quotes British intelligence as saying that the United States has been hoodwinked, or the CIA has been hoodwinked by Iran. By the way, it's sort of interesting that the Bush administration was trumpeting Saddam's WMD program on the basis of the thoroughly discredited and bogus Niger Yellowcake situation. Turns out that information was coming courtesy of a person who was an asset of the SISMI Italian Intelligence Service, which in turn is inextricably linked with the milieu of Italian fascism and the Alleanza Nazionale. That's the successor party to Mussolini's fascist party. It's also the party that was a coalition partner with Silvio Berlusconi's party, Silvio Berlusconi being the Prime Minister of Italy, and Alleanza Nazionale head Gianfranco Fini being the Foreign Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister of Italy under Silvio Berlusconi, himself a member of the fascist P2 Lodge. And recall that, as we've looked at in numerous programs, including For the Record 456, the milieu of the Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood is inextricably linked with that of Italian fascism, the P2 milieu, and the milieu of the Alleanza Nazionale. And it was that milieu that helped to channel the uranium Niger yellowcake disinformation of the Bush administration, which trumpeted it to the world and then wound up looking ridiculous, and now certainly isn't going to admit that it let the real WMD situation snoop right out or sneak right out of Iraq under its nose. And now, after trumpeting the fact, and I believe it is a fact, that Iran is going for nuclear weapons, the national intelligence estimate, and by the way, we'll talk about that later, not in this broadcast, but later on in time. That was headed up, that assessment is headed up by somebody named Von Van Diepen. And the report that Iran was no longer going for nuclear weapons is kind of in a reverse situation than the Bush administration's claims about Iraq. Nobody in Europe believes that Iran has given up its nuclear weapons program other than Von Van Diepen. He's in the United States. He headed up the National Intelligence Estimate. Note that Iran is building a heavy water reactor at a place called Arak, and people who are in the know say that it is extraordinarily unlikely that they're building a heavy water reactor for any purposes other than the development of nuclear weapons. Among the many national intelligence agencies that is skeptical, doesn't believe the U.S. national intelligence estimate, and this is kind of the reverse of the way things were in the run-up to the Iraq invasion, and that is British intelligence. Article from The Telegraph, among other British papers, discusses this. This is an article from December 12th of 2007. Iran hoodwinked CIA over nuclear plans. It's by Tim Shipman in Washington, Philip Sherwell, and Carolyn Wheeler. And it reads in part, British spy chiefs have grave doubts that Iran has mothballed its nuclear weapons programs, as a U.S. intelligence report claimed last week, and believe the CIA has been hoodwinked by Tehran. The timing of the CIA report has also provoked fury in the British government, where officials believe it has undermined efforts to impose tough new sanctions on Iran and made an Israeli attack on its nuclear facilities more likely. The security services in London want concrete evidence to allay concerns that the Islamic State has fed disinformation to the CIA. The report used new evidence, including human sources, wireless intercepts, and evidence from an Iranian defector, to conclude that Tehran suspended the bomb-making side of its nuclear program in 2003. But British intelligence is concerned that U.S. spy chiefs were so determined to avoid giving President Bush a reason to go to war, as their reports on Saddam Hussein's weapons program did in Iraq, that they got it wrong this time. A senior British official delivered a withering assessment of U.S. intelligence gathering capabilities in the Middle East and revealed that British spies shared the concerns of Israeli defense chiefs that Iran was still pursuing nuclear weapons. We'll explore this at greater length in the future. Suffice it to say that, once again, there are intelligence chiefs in this country that are raising those sorts of concerns. And, indeed, among the things that we're going to be exploring in the future concerns whistleblower Sibel Edmonds' disclosures that key U.S. officials are deliberately betraying U.S. military secrets to Islamists, among others. We're also going to take a look at some of the kinds of people that the FBI has been conducting outreach toward. Let's just say if the FBI considers people like the folks that we're going to be, like Israr Ahmad, to be friends, well, who is going to need enemies? Anyway, we're going to take a look at the fifth column, and we're going to take a look at the money that drives it and the relationships that drive it, but that all in broadcasts to come. For some background on some of these various activities and some of the topics of discussion, do utilize the descriptions that are available for the record shows. Utilize the many audio files available from Spitfire and from sister station WFMU, and also from a private individual who has collated the shows on MP3, and also utilized the vast amount of printed information on the Spitfire website, the books in particular. We'll be exploring the fifth column. We'll be exploring Economics 911. We'll be exploring all of these things at greater length in the future. However, this wraps up side two of For the Record program number 625. You gotta be kidding, part two. Update on September 11th and related matters. This is being recorded on February 17th of the year 2008. My name's Dave Emery. You gotta be kidding.